Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 153, recorded Friday, January 26, 2019. This is the podcast giving the voice of the traveler. It's more about the journey than the destination. Two topics on this edition of the Travel Commons Podcast: travel by algorithm and leaving places behind. So coming to you today from the podcast studio in the 1871 Tech Incubator in Chicago, Illinois. I have to say that this is the most professional studio I've recorded in since my high school days in Memphis, Tennessee. It also took me about 15 minutes to figure out which end was up, and I still can't quite hear myself, so we'll see how this goes. I mean, the sound on this ought to be phenomenal, but I'm not quite sure I'll be able to tell until I get into production. So here we go. And it's been, you know, it's been a few weeks since we did a 2 week sort of Celtic jaunt, a week touring in Ireland, and then a week of graduation festivities at University of St Andrews in Scotland with my daughter. I've talked a bit about the planning for this trip in the past couple of episodes, sort of wrestling through the Avios website to sort of kludge together flights on Aer Lingus and to quite honestly burn off some of those Avios points that have been sitting around for, I don't know, 5 to 10 years, and then trying to sift through the horror stories of Irish car rentals. There were a lot of places that this trip could have gone wrong, but it didn't. The flights on Aer Lingus were fine, nothing special, but they were serviceable. Our budget car rental experience in Dublin was the same, a basic Renault compact with about 30,000 kilometers on it, but no issues with the folks at either end of the pickup or or at the drop-off in the car. The car worked fine. All the places I booked in Ireland were fine. The bed and breakfasts actually on the West Coast were great. The hotel in Dublin was, again, serviceable, and we didn't really have any rain to speak of until our last day in Dublin. The flights between Dublin and Edinburgh were on a turboprop plane, an ATR 72-600, for the plane nerds in the audience. I can't remember the last time I was on a prop plane. I mean, even the quick 30-minute hops that I'd do occasionally between Washington Dulles and Charlottesville were on Embraer jets. But I remember way back in my early flying days, American Eagle used to fly a lot of these ATRs. And, you know, once those props started turning on this flight, I popped on my Bose noise-canceling headphones. I mean, those American Eagle ATRs were one of the main reasons that I invested in my first pair of Bose. But other than sort of a rainy walk to and from that plane in Dublin and Edinburgh on Monday, they were fine flights. Indeed, if there was any hiccup, it was on arrival at Dublin from O'Hare. So at the end of that first leg, we checked luggage, even though I know that one of my regular top travel tips is to carry on. But I knew that plane was full, that O'Hare to Dublin leg. I knew that that Airbus was full. And since Aer Lingus isn't part of either Oneworld or Star Alliance, neither my American nor my United status was going to get us pre-boarded. And so rather than worrying about having a jockey for overhead space, we checked our bags. And anyways, it was free. It was included in the fare. So low hassle boarding in Dublin. I stood at the luggage carousel, watched it heave out a dozen or so bags, and then nothing. No worries, I'd seen that before. The guys must be driving the tug back to the plane. And then the carousel stopped. Again, not too worried. Seen that before too, just saving a little energy. And then the lights above us went out. Okay, this is a new one. I have to say that I started to worry a bit until I saw our pilot also looking around for his luggage. So, yeah, it made me feel a little bit better. After 20 minutes, the lights came back on and the carousel started pumping out bags again. And there was kind of this simultaneous sigh of relief from all the chaperones that were accompanying the half dozen student trips that were packed on this flight. So following up, the biggest travel news, at least to me, since the last episode, American Airlines announced the retirement, finally, of the last of its MD-80s, the Super 80s, or Mad Dog 80s, with the last revenue flight planned for September 4th from DFW to O'Hare, which for me is very apropos because I spent a lot of time in the mid-80s flying MD-80s between those two American hubs. I had thought that the 737 MAX grounding might delay the final MD-80 flight, but it looks like American has scrounged up enough 737-800s to fill the gap. I posted American's announcement on the Travel Commons Facebook page. Jim McDonough commented, "Flew the Mad Dog many, many times. My wife and I would select row 9 on the two-seat side, flying usually DFW to San Diego. She's tiny, so I felt like I was in first class. You know, the left-hand two-seat side was great for couples. Got a window and an aisle seat without having to guess if the center seat would be filled. But then you had to deal with the short overhead bins on that side where you could only fit your bag in sideways. And there was usually no sort of in-seat power supply, though they did have cigarette-style power adapters on the other side, the three-seat side, but they were only in every other row. The MD-80 was a unique plane. Now, back in May, in episode 151, Travel Commons listener Mika Prakala sent in a note about his experience with a flight rebooking service, Freebird. He had a great experience. And then this week, I was booking a trip to Charlottesville on the Amex travel site with my Platinum card. At the end of the booking, it offered me free Freebird coverage for the trip. Now, I had to check a box to opt in, so I read the fine print pretty closely to make sure it was really free. But it was. Seems Freebird and Amex are doing a free trial. I don't know how long it lasts, but I'll opt in every time, with the hope, though, that I don't actually have to use it. Now, some sort of bits and bobs, some random observations from this Ireland-Scotland trip. Like so many folks, I'm carrying my own water bottle on flights. I started last fall. The big Amazon Web Services conference gave everybody a refillable water bottle, replacing those big barrels of iced single-use water bottles with refillable stations. So it made all sense in the world to me. Now, most airports have refilling spigots next to the regular water fountains. Now, Irene has carried one forever, and actually it came in handy when Aer Lingus wanted to charge her €3 for a bottle of water on one of our flights. Now, I lost that original AWS water bottle a few months back, which sort of matches my usual sort of 6-month time to loss metric. No big deal. It was just a plastic bottle with a screw-on cap, but I wanted a new one. So for Father's Day, Claire gave me a new sort of souped-up 20-ounce water bottle with a push-button pop-up drinking spout and a carabiner loop, just very, very nice. Like order of magnitude quantum level improvements from that AWS bottle. So I pulled it out on one of our Aer Lingus flights, again, kind of avoiding that €3 charge. And I hit the button for the spout to pop up and immediately get hit square in the eye with this fat stream of water from my bottle now turned water fountain. Apparently, this fancy new water bottle seals airtight, which means the water in the bottle stayed at ground pressure, while now in the cabin, the pressure's a little lower, you know, something between sort of 6,000 and 8,000 feet. Now, I'm used to sort of foil-sealed yogurts, you know, having to be careful when you open those away from you. But I wasn't quite used to this with my water bottle. And it was a surprise, not for me, but the Irish guy sitting next to me who was napping before he caught a little bit of shrapnel from my portable water cannon. One of the things I look forward to when staying at bed and breakfasts in the UK and Ireland are the breakfasts. And the breakfasts we had in Ireland were at least, again, an order of magnitude better than the best concierge lounge fare at the Marriott, which, I don't know, that might actually be damning the B&Bs with faint praise, and I don't mean to. We had great breakfasts. For most of our time on the West Coast, we were hubbed out of Galway, staying in the same place for 3 nights or, more importantly, 3 breakfasts. The first morning choice was easy. full cooked breakfast, eggs, bacon, sausage, black and white pudding, tomatoes, mushrooms, baked beans, and toast. Now, we were doing a good bit of hiking that day, and it was a good thing I wasn't hungry until about 3 o'clock, but doing that 2 days in a row felt like I would be tempting fate, or at least an arterial blockage or two. So the next morning, I went with the healthier choice, oatmeal porridge. The presentation was pretty typical, big bowl of porridge, little cups of raisins, brown sugar, and cream. I mix in the raisins, a touch of the brown sugar, a little bit of the cream to loosen up the porridge, except it doesn't smell like cream. I taste it. It's Bailey's Irish cream. So I immediately dump the rest of it into the porridge. I figure, you know, a porridge with a Bailey's topper kind of feels like the Irish version of a Bloody Mary. Now, one of the big differences for me between running a car in the U.S. and in Europe is pre-car inspection. You get the keys, the rental agreement, and a form showing the condition of the car before you take it off the lot, sort of pre-existing dings and scratches. Now, I always give this form to Irene. She's much pickier than I am. She walks around the car making notes of anything missing while I figure out the rearview mirrors and how to pair my iPhone to the entertainment system. So I was kind of surprised to get an email from Hertz before getting on our flight to Edinburgh, and it had a bunch of pictures of a Kia wagon. Now, here was our car. Here was the documentation of its condition. So we walked straight to the car, loaded up the luggage, drove off. No walk-around inspection. It makes sense. I mean, we had gotten to the point, actually, in our last couple of rentals where we were taking pictures of the dings and the scratches, as well as marking them on the form. Now, here, Hertz was doing it for us. Not sure if I got this because I'm Hertz Gold, but it certainly was a big improvement in the rental experience, though I still had to figure out how to pair my iPhone. You know, the timing on international connections in Europe always feels a bit kind of a crapshoot because there doesn't always seem to be a consistent rule about having to pass through security again at the connection site. Amsterdam, for example, no security. Frankfurt, no security for European connections, but security if you're flying to, say, India or the Middle East. London Heathrow, security every time. Maybe even just a couple of extra passes through security just for kicks. Dublin, though, had a new twist. Go through the usual drill, pull out all your electronics, take off your belt, push your bags through the X-ray machine. But then, where's the metal detector? Just walk past the security guy and put my PC back in the bag. I looked back. I mean, there was a metal detector all the way at the end of the security hall, but there was only one. I mean, the rest of us were acting like we were walking through a metal detector, except there wasn't one. It was odd. As I said before, we were in Scotland for Claire's graduation from University of St. Andrews, so we end up hanging around, drinking beer with folks a couple of generations younger than me. I mean, this group was sort of right on that millennial Gen Z boundary, and it's always, for me, an educational experience. But when the conversation turned to their new favorite app, Poop Map, I thought this is it. They're leading this old guy on. I mean, an app where you and your friends share the places that you've pooped, complete with star ratings and comments. I mean, this seemed, you know, too much like an Onion headline. I mean, this is social media taken to the absurd extreme. Except it wasn't satire. It was real. I mean, they all pulled out their phones, fired up the apps, and showed me their check-ins. Okay then, but you know, that whole comment around oversharing, but I got to tell you, I think checking in beers on Untappd is about as far down that path as I really want to go. And if you've got any travel stories, check-ins, questions, comments, tips, rants, the voice of the traveler, send them along, text or audio comments to comments. COMMENTS at travelcommons.com. You can always send a Twitter message to M. Peacock. Post your thoughts on the Travel Commons Facebook page or the Instagram account at Travel Commons, or post your comments on the website at travelcommons.com. So the first topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is travel by algorithm. On that rainy Monday after we flew from Dublin to Edinburgh, I drove us downtown to meet some friends for the day. Now, the rain was beginning to muck up traffic. So I was kind of glued to Google Maps to help route us around some of the traffic tie-ups, which meant we weren't on the usual route that I'd take in from the airport, which meant I was just about completely dependent upon Google, completely trusting that algorithm, which was kind of broken, that trust, that is, when I followed Google's directions through a warning sign and onto a buses-only road. Google directed me to keep driving down that road, but since I was only a single-decker Kia wagon, I didn't think any attempt to masquerade as a bus was going to survive our first police contact. So I took the first left, which actually is much easier when you're driving on the left-hand side of the road, hoping that the algorithm would produce a bit more of a legal routing. It was annoying, but not overly shocking. I mean, there had been a steady stream of stories for years about GPSs leading people astray. I mean, I had this topic way back in the early days of Travel Commons, episode number 36, in 2006 to be exact, when they were called sat-navs, and I told a story about making a dash to San Francisco Airport after a sales meeting. I'm riding shotgun, tracking our progress on one of those paper maps that Hertz used to put in every car. But we also had one of the new Hertz Never Lost sat-navs. It seemed, though, to be about 10 seconds slow as I was comparing where it thought we were and where I thought we were based on the paper map. So I spotted our turn onto I-580, onto the freeway, but Hertz said nothing. Turn, I told the driver. No, Brian said. You need to trust the technology. So when Hertz said to turn, about 10 seconds later, Brian did, right into a gas station. Now, not as bad as stories of people driving across closed bridges, into rivers, onto train tracks, up unpaved mountain roads, but I have to tell you, in the subsequent 13 years with sat-nav, now GPS, moving from our cars to our pockets, we lean on those algorithms much more than ever. And, you know, now living in Chicago, I haven't even bothered to learn any of the public transit routes, any of the bus routes. I just use Google Maps or the transit app to tell me what bus to catch when and where. Sometimes I'll use HipMunk, the travel website, to look at flight options when I'm looking at a new city or a place that I haven't been to in a while. I mean, they promote their agony sort, which is where their algorithm rates flights by a combination of price, duration, number of stops, and dependability. Now, heading back to Charlottesville, since I haven't been there in sort of 6 or 7 months, I did hit HipMunk, say that three times fast, to check out American's and United's current flight offerings. So I scrolled down from the nonstops through the one stops. What I did think was interesting, though, was that HipMunk's algorithm scored a 24-hour Amtrak ride that had a 3-hour layover and connection in Washington's Union Station. It scored that as less agonizing than a 6-hour 2-stop trip on United Express with connections in Columbus, Ohio, and Washington Dulles. That seemed a little odd to me. It seemed like that algorithm had not quite weighed connections with duration. But I don't know, given some of my United Express experiences over the past couple of years, I don't know, who am I to second guess that algorithm? One of the things that I liked about the soon-to-be-turned-off, as in next month, Google Trips app is how it would automatically generate itinerary recommendations for a city. It would pick out points of interest that had high Google review scores, and then it would combine the operating hours, the hours each would be open, and it picked that up from Google's business listing, and would combine that with the typical amount of time that it would see people stay there, as well as the location and traffic data from Google Maps to generate the best itinerary. I mean, this fascinated me and kind of sucked me into a clickhole of academic papers presented at places like the International Conference on the Practice and Theory of Automated Timetabling, that I'm signing up for that one next year, or the International Conference on Web Search and Data Mining. And they were talking about these papers about how the tourist trip problem, TTP, is actually a route planning problem on multiple points of interest. And the TTP can be considered an extension of the classical problem, which is team orienteering problem with time windows. Wow. I mean, I kind of actually want to try and use this to automatically generate craft beer taproom crawls. But I have to tell you, as I was paging through those papers, kind of the math made my eyes sort of bleed. But it was, I mean, you can go way deep on this stuff, on all the algorithm stuff. But back, you know, back to that rainy day in Edinburgh, Google Maps actually redeemed itself at the end of the day. There had been so much rain that Monday that our usual path out of the city, the A90, was at a complete standstill because of flooded underpasses and stalled cars that tried to make it through the flooded underpasses. Google Maps guided us past a gridlocked traffic circle, winding us through some apartment complexes, bypassing these flooded parts and putting us right onto the M90 so we could head to St. Andrews. It was, at the end of all of it, better travel through algorithms. The second topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is leaving places behind. I have to tell you that driving out of St. Andrews that last time was a bit melancholy. We'd spent the last four Septembers there. You know, saw things change, restaurants open and close, the Edinburgh airport get a lot spiffier. But also, you know, familiar things that stay the same. The Keys, which is my favorite dive whiskey bar, St. Andrews Brewing Company, or Stabco as my daughter would call it, always a great beer selection from across the UK. And Janagir, an Indian restaurant we found our first year because they were the only place we could find a table that Friday night. And then we just kept going back every year because they had great food and they were really nice people and we never couldn't get a table. The melancholy was that we probably wouldn't be back, at least not for a long time. It's at St. Andrews, it's sort of out of the way, which certainly is part of its charm, but it's why we probably won't be back for a while. I felt that same way when I finished a project in Portland, Oregon some years back. I was in Portland every week for 3 or 4 months and got to know the downtown pretty well. I explored new places, but I also, you know, had my favorite spots that I'd hit every week. Clyde Commons for dinner at the bar, Bailey's Tap Room for a beer because they always had a great new beer selection every week. When that project ended, I knew I wouldn't be back to Portland for a very long time because there just wasn't as much business there. As opposed to, say, New York or San Francisco, you know, wrapping up a project in those cities, not a real big deal because there's enough business. You know you're always going to be back within, you know, a year. New Orleans was kind of in the middle for me. I'd been there almost nonstop for 3 to 4 years, got to know it really, really well. But when that work stream ended, well, I didn't think business would bring me down there again because, again, there's not really that much going on. It's not so far out of the way, and I knew I'd be down there often for vacations or conventions, which is actually how it turned out. I get down there sort of every other year. Some of that melancholy comes from regret, from things you always meant to do but never made time for. I'll do that next time, you'd say to yourself, but then never get to it. The last time I was in Charlottesville, Virginia, I was finishing up what had been another 3 to 4 year stream of work, and I wasn't sure when I'd be back. And for me, Charlottesville is a bit like St. Andrews, kind of an out-of-the-way college town, although Charlottesville is only a 2-hour flight from Chicago. St. Andrews, it's an 8 to 10 hour fly and drive. But, you know, I didn't know when I was going to get back, you know, sort of if ever. I didn't know if anything was going to bring me back there. And so over those years, that 3 or 4 years, I'd always plan to take sort of a half day off and drive the 15 minutes from my client up to Monticello, Thomas Jefferson's home, and take the tour. I mean, it's always written up as a must see. And here I was right here. But every time I was going to go do it, something would come up and I'd say, I'll do that next time. So here I was the last time. I didn't know the next time I would be here. And I really didn't have that much time in my schedule. But after lunch one day, I walked out taking calls all the way to the Monticello parking lot, then turned off my phone and really had a great tour and flew out the next morning without regret, or at least without regret about Monticello. But 6 months later, I'm heading back to Charlottesville. So I don't know, maybe I'll get back to St. Andrews sooner than I think. Maybe I should see if Stabco needs an old guy bartender. Okay, that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons podcast number 153. I hope you all enjoyed the show, and I hope you decide to stay subscribed. Check out the show notes for music links. You can find us on SoundCloud, Stitcher, TuneIn, Alexa, iTunes, Spotify. The links, along with the RSS feeds for all you propeller spinners, people at 1871 Tech Incubator, it's all on the right-hand side of the Travel Commons website under the heading Subscribe. So please do. And right below that, in the social media section, are the links to the Travel Commons Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram feeds. If you've already subscribed, how about leaving us a review on one of those sites? And if you don't already, please follow us on one or multiple social media channels. Anyhow, if you've got a story, thought, comment, gripe, the voice of a traveler, send it along. Text your audio file, comments, COMMENTS, at travelcommons.com, or to M. Peacock at Twitter. Write them on the Travel Commons Facebook page, the Instagram site. Post them on the website at travelcommons.com. Thanks to everyone who has taken the time to send in emails, tweets, and post comments on the website. So from the podcast studio at the 1871 Tech Incubator in the Merchandise Mart in downtown Chicago, actually River North Chicago, right on the Chicago River, I'll be really interested to see what this sounds like. And actually, if it doesn't, then I'll have to re-record it all again. But until we talk next time, take care, safe travels, and thanks for stopping by the Travel Commons. Bye now.